Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series 4 of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. For now though, sit back, relax, and let's take things from here. This week, I am joined by Steve Crisco. Steve is now the VP of Project Management at Worldwide Clinical Trials. And I say VP of, or now VP of Project Management, because I think since we last spoke, Steve, have you had a promotion, did I see on LinkedIn?
I did. You're right, James. And thanks. Thanks for that.
Congrats on that. I mean, does much change? Is it new territory, new responsibilities? Or yeah, I mean, I get it's a fairly lofty title.
Well, I would say right now I'm still doing all the same things. So for those people that may be watching it, I'm working with you. My role has not changed. I always throw a disclaimer out there. It can change in the future, but right now my role is the same, just title's a little bit different. So it's the same me.
Cool. Well, look, I guess I've given you a quick intro of, yeah, who you are and what you're doing. But, you know, in your own words, if you were to give yourself an introduction about your role, the company and what you do, sure. Both personally and as a business, I guess, how would you describe it?
Yeah. So, yes, I'm a Vice President of Project Management in the oncology group at Worldwide Clinical Trials. Mm-hmm. And so what I do, I am a line manager to project managers and project directors within our group. I work hand in hand with our sales and business development team on new exciting opportunities, but I also work really closely with clients that I'm assigned to on their oncology projects to make sure that we're delivering on time, on budget, and with quality. So that's kind of what I do. I really enjoy the interactions that I get to have, not only with our internal team, just really some amazing people cross-functionally that I work with, but also we've got some really amazing clients that have some really exciting new treatments they're working on. So I love that part of my job.
Amazing stuff. And a few tick boxes there for any clients listening in: on time, in budget, and quality. That's what everyone likes to hear, right, Steve?
That's project management. That's what we're supposed to be delivering.
I like it. Well, we'll come on to a bit more about your current role and Worldwide in due course. But as in typical Huxley Morton podcast fashion, we'll first kind of rewind as to how you got into the industry.
Sure.
Because I think it was it mid-90s you started out in this game. But yeah, I mean, how did you...
Thank you for aging me, James. Thank you.
Oh, sorry for throwing out dates there. Sorry.
<I'm good.
laughs> I mean, how did you get into this industry? I mean, was it a route that you wanted to go down, really?
I didn't know really much of anything about the industry when I got into it. Just a little bit about my background. I've got my bachelor's degree is actually in physical education, and my master's degree is in exercise science.
Right.
And so my second year of grad school at the University of North Carolina, I was actually working at our big rival, Duke University, of all places, the psychiatry lab. And we did a lot of exercise intervention studies in different disease states. And to make a long story short, I that helped me learn that I really enjoyed research. And I actually met one of our exercise group participants who was a CRA manager at a local CRO and talked to me about the industry. And I thought, this really sounds neat and exciting. And she convinced me to apply for a CRA job, which I did. And I was hired and went, got trained, became a CRA. That was about 27 years ago.
Wow.
So I very unintentionally backed into the industry, but I really think I found my niche and really loved all the different things I've done in the industry.
Interesting. I guess that like many kind of fallen into this path, but what do you think you would have been doing then if kind of you hadn't made that connection, you hadn't met that individual, you weren't involved in that particular study at the time? What do you think? What was the plan? You know, where would Steve be now?
I actually really was enjoying the work I was doing at Duke University at the time. So that could have very well been a path to kind of stay with that group, continue doing exercise intervention research and learning more about how we can impact different diseases, because we were doing some of the obvious things like hypertension, right? I think it's pretty well known how exercise can impact hypertension, but also depression. So we had a depression study going on at the time, smoking, different things. So could have gone down that path and really fascinating. And I think I could have been very happy doing that as well. But I saw the growth potential when I looked at heading into clinical research, and that was something that was very intriguing to me.
I guess I always think about these kind of sliding doors moments, I guess, because I'm very similar. I like my sports. I like anything that is exercise related.
Right.
I kind of find that quite fascinating. Then managed to find myself in recruitment and, and then recruiting into clinical research. It's not something that I had mapped out. So I always like to find out, kind of where others kicked off their journeys. It sounds like it started with that kind of that one connection and that introduction to, CRA life. But, that's, as you say, without dating yourself too much, going back a few years now, there's a couple of gray hairs on the head now that you've picked up along the way. It can be a stressful gig being a CRA, but talk us through your journey. There's often a lot of people just trying to get that first step, which is making it as a CRA. So talk to us about your journey from that point.
Yeah, so I was able to get involved with some amazing people that I'm still in touch with today, actually, and we've crossed paths multiple times. In my initial job as a CRA, I was at this particular CRO, I think about 16 months. And so really got that crash course in clinical research and being a CRA and how to do the job. I got a pretty amazing opportunity to do some contracting work with a large pharma. Really that set me on a path to spend quite a few years in large pharma.
Nice.
And that was very different. But that also gave me more of a full spectrum of the whole clinical development process.
Mm-hmm.
I got the opportunity to continue doing monitoring, but also study management, protocol writing, got a lot of exposure to data management and different aspects of the role. Mm-hmm. So I think that led me into a path eventually to go into project management.
I see. Yeah, kind of that natural progression, picking up the additional aspects of what's involved with studies. I work with a lot of CRAs. We do a lot of placement of CRAs.
Yeah.
I know that it can be a stressful job. There can often be a lot of travel, which is sometimes glamorized. What did it look like? What was life like back then? Were you traveling all the time? What was the best and worst parts of it?
Well, it did involve quite a bit of travel. Of course, this is early days where I don't know, some of the listeners or viewers on YouTube may not have ever dealt with a paper CRF. But I remember, doing things like sitting at a site and pulling the three-part NCR paper, taking the CRFs in. So it did involve quite a bit of travel, never overwhelming, but one of the most interesting things is before that CRA job, I had never really traveled any. I never really done any travel. My family didn't do that.
Yeah.
So within a couple 3-year period, I had gone all over the US, I went to North Dakota. That was interesting. Everywhere from South Florida to North Dakota. So, getting to see the extremes. So, very face to face. I know right now we're doing this on Zoom. So nobody had thought of that. So we spend a lot of time on the phone with your sites, and then visiting them in person, doing your in-person investigator meetings and site initiations and that sort of thing. So it was a very different world at that time.
Mm. And do you think that, I guess, some of the habits or characteristics that you picked up as a CRA then allowed you to almost mold your career then into to what you're doing now on the project management side of things? Because, you know, as you say, kind of back then Zoom didn't exist. Everything was very much more face to face. You had to deal with people. And I think project management, as far as I see it, it's a communications based job.
Absolutely. 100%. One of the things I learned really early being a CRA is that as a CRA, I found those relationships with my study coordinators to be critical.
Mm.
I can remember like it was yesterday. I think I was less than a year into my CRA job, and I had a coordinator call me up with a potential pretty serious, deviation, right? And so it dawned on me later that without having built a good relationship with the coordinator, she might not have been comfortable calling me to tell me about something that was really, really important, but was also super sensitive.
Yeah.
And I realized that I needed those coordinators to help me do my job. So it became really key for me to build those relationships. And I've learned through the progression of my career that really it's all about the relationship. So I try to bring that not only to my team internally at Worldwide, mm-hmm. but also with the clients that we work with, to really work on that relationship and make that a key part of how we work together, building relationships so that we can have the good conversations, but also the difficult ones.
Yeah. Well, I guess clearly you were good at building relationships, Steve, because your progression, from CRA to where you are now is pretty astronomical. If you were to kind of perhaps pinpoint what it is, where that's maybe come from, whether it's been, your childhood, your parents, any mentors that have instilled certain, whether it's values or habits that have allowed you to consistently, go somewhere, make an impact, take the next step,
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think my parents set the baseline for that as running small businesses and understanding their customers and the people that they worked with and how it was very relationship based. Then as I, got into my career, as you had pointed out, was through a relationship. How I transitioned, for instance, from my first job into a very different job within Big Pharma, that was through a relationship. As I progressed then to my first job as a project manager ever, it was relationship based. And my current role at Worldwide, I'm here in large part through a relationship. And as I mentioned, there are people that I started out with very early in my career several years ago who I'm still in communication with today, and we've maintained those relationships. And it's been super important to me as I continue. I like to think I'm always learning. And so a key point for me, I had a supervisor several years ago I was working with, and she recognized that I was a little frustrated in my career development, and I felt like I should be further along. And she kindly suggested that I just get some coaching that might help me. And that was another turning point where I realized I need to lean on these relationships. I need to do a better job of not only my communication, but how I build and leverage relationships. So that was a few years ago, and I've really taken that with me since, and it's a real key turning point for me.
Interesting. And do you still utilize a coach? Because I think that there's so many professionals that don't necessarily follow that route. I guess in sports, you see it all the time. As I say, look, I'm massive on sports. You know, myself, you know, I boxed at international level, but I had a coach, you know, and I think all top athletes have coaches. Doesn't mean that the coach is better, but it's to draw the best out of you, isn't it? And I think a lot of people don't necessarily utilize this on a business level. So I'm just wondering whether you have maintained that sort of relationship with coaches and kind of would encourage others to do so as well. Or...
Yeah, I would. I have very recently been involved with a coach and having regular sessions. And I would highly encourage everyone to take a look at that. After my first experience working with a job or career coach, I actually went through the training that my employer at the time offered, because they had a really unique, I say it's unique, maybe it's not, but I haven't seen it anywhere else. Any person within the organization could request coaching, not for an infinite period, but I think maybe a 6 month period. And the way the company was able to offer that is they had their own internally trained coaches. So employees that it was kind of a job plus thing, right? You had your normal job, but if you wanted to do the coaching, you'd do that on the side. Yeah. So I actually went through the training. I loved it so much. I went through the training to become one of the coaches. I'm no longer at that organization, but I learned some skills and really it enhanced my appreciation for how that could benefit me. So yes, I've been recently getting coached and I think it's great. It's not a bad thing.
Sometimes I think when I was younger, I thought I knew more than I did at times. Whereas I think sometimes with a bit of age,
I still do sometimes.
Yeah. You come to realize actually you don't know half as much as what you would like to think you know. And actually, when you accept that, you can just improve and everyone can improve. Let's kind of get a snapshot of what life now looks like. So you recently had the promotion, your VP project management in the oncology line at Worldwide Clinical Trials. What is it like at Worldwide Clinical Trials? Because I've had a few guests on the show, Jeff Trotter, Aman Kera, and everyone that I've interacted with has always just been just very down to earth and easy to deal with. I'm hoping that Amani's soon going to be coming over to the UK to, you know, and I'll be able to meet her in person. But what's in the water over there? You know, because it seems like such a good place. What's it like?
And I have to say before I go into that, I mean, two fantastic individuals that I've had the opportunity to work with and continue to work with. And Aman and I worked together on several projects. So great folks. It's just highly collaborative. And I don't throw that word around lightly because it's easy to get into a silo mentality in an organization, small or large. But it's a very collaborative teamwork environment. It's not a blame or finger pointing culture. We like to roll our sleeves up and just get the job done, regardless of what your job description is. I couldn't tell you, I've described what I do, but I probably couldn't tell you what's in my job description. I just know what we need to get done. Mm-hmm. And I can lean on folks, Aman, Jeff, they're a team's message away. And that's the way we operate at Worldwide. I can tell you in the oncology group, we pretty much exclusively work with biotech partners. Mm-hmm. And that's a very dynamic environment. Very entrepreneurial, and I like to think we operate in a similar way.
I like it. And look, in terms of, because I saw various vids from Worldwide recently, kind of explaining what a CRO is. Now, I guess you work there. I work with CROs all the time. But, you know, anyone that is, you know, new to the industry, trying to learn some of the lingo, because I think if you walk down the street or you meet a lot of just friends, family, and say, I work for a CRO, they're probably going to say, Steve, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what is that?
If you were to kind of sum it up, I mean, what does Worldwide do as a CRO, as it may be?
Yeah, we partner with biotech and pharma companies to help them bring their new treatments they're working on to patients. And how do we do that? We do that by helping to operationalize the studies and different aspects that are required, and more than just the studies, because we have end-to-end services. People will describe Worldwide as a mid-sized CRO. I think it's a little bit of a worn-out phrase. I like to say we're the right size, because we are global. Obviously, our name is Worldwide.
Yeah.
It's hard to be named Worldwide if we weren't global. But we also offer the end-to-end services. So, that's really it. We're here for the patients to bring new treatments to patients, but we don't, there are our treatments. Usually those biotech companies are coming to us and saying, hey, we may be three people in a closet office, and we don't have the hands and feet and expertise needed to bring this all the way to the patient. That's where we come in.
No, exactly. And I think that's where, you know, the communication, it falls back to that communication piece, isn't it? You need to be able to listen to the client, understand what they need to achieve, and then put the right people and or resources together to fill that, and kind of right back to, you know, as we open the show, on time, in budget, and, you know, with the quality that they're looking for.
Right. And you mentioned Aman and Jeff, they're key folks. I'll talk about them and just working with clients, even getting to the point of being ready to do the clinical trial. I'm more on the operational side of actually carrying it out. They're strategic, and so we can offer all those services, and that's, I get excited talking about when we get to interact with clients in those very early stages, when really this is just an idea, and we can help them shape what the idea looks like and then carry it through execution.
Amazing. And look, Steve, I guess one thing that's running through my head here is just hearing you talk about through your journey, starting out as a CRA to now kind of guiding the ship, as it may be, certainly in that oncology line. How has life changed for you since you started out, and, you know, to what your day-to-day looks like now? Yeah, it must be kind of chalk and cheese, but I guess you tell me.
Yeah, it is really different, because when you're starting out as a CRA, this isn't like one way is better than the other. They're just different roles. That's a little bit more of a, for lack of a better term, task list based position.
Yeah.
Where, you know, my job was to make sure I you know, monitored those sites, got the data in, wrote the reports, et cetera, et cetera. Today, my job is much more strategic. So I spend a lot more time talking conceptually about strategy and overall how we carry out trials and how we deliver and, you know, meet many times challenging milestones, right? Everybody's got what their goals are, and just helping our clients and our teams hit those targets. So it's really, you know, going from maybe the 5,000 foot view to the 30,000 foot view is more of what I spend my time on. And I've discovered, I really love that kind of role. I love being in more of a strategic role, but also get excited when we get to put those ideas into practice and seeing them work.
Sure. You've got me thinking of the book I read not so long back by Stephen Covey, I think it is, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And when you're describing the kind of the role of a CRA to now the more strategic role of what you're doing, I'm guessing that there is perhaps a different skill set needed in order to excel in either position.
Right.
What would you say those are, if you were to try and pinpoint them? What makes you good at what you do now compared to what makes a good CRA? Because again, like, there may perhaps is people out there. I know some people they love the CRA life. They just want to keep doing it. Others, you know, who are looking for something more strategic, perhaps may think, okay, I'd like to be doing what Steve's doing. What do I need to focus on in order to achieve that? So what skills would you say that, where's the difference?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say, you know, sometimes I have to be comfortable in the unknown. And so what do I mean by that? I have to be comfortable taking a concept with maybe not all the details that I need to build out a plan, making assumptions, always making those assumptions clear, but being comfortable, not necessarily in chaos, but when everything isn't clear, cut and dried.
Right.
When you know, I'm
how
doing...
do you do that? It's all very well saying it. What have you got, any mechanisms that you employ to do that?
There is, I'm going to describe it as an art and a science, because I can't tell someone to be comfortable in a situation where you know 50% of the variables and the other 50% you have to deduce on your own. Part of that comes with experience, having done it before. I know from my past experience, this is the way things normally go. Mm-hmm. So now I can plan for it in the absence of those facts, right?
Yeah.
Some of it, you're not going to come straight in the industry, and that's probably why you don't come straight in the industry in a strategic role, because you need to gain that through experience. I haven't always been comfortable in the chaos or the lack of, you know, known facts, but I am much more comfortable now, because I can say, here's when I was in this situation last time, here's what happened, here's what I learned from that.
It's so refreshing to hear you say that, Steve, rather than almost come up with some BS mechanism as to what you've developed over the years, because I think that's it, isn't it? It's that experience piece. You know, you can't learn experience, you have to earn experience. And the only way to get that is, as you say, to have kind of be basing your decisions and level of comfort really through having been there before.
Right. You know? Yeah. And it's not to say that everyone is going to want to go into a strategic role. I always say we need people who, for instance, we're talking about CRAs. They love being a CRA. They're really good at it, and they're not interested in moving to a different role.
Yeah,
that's perfectly fine. I don't want anyone to listen to this and think that's what I'm saying. We need people that are approaching this from many different angles, and that's what makes it work.
Yeah, no, good to hear. And look, I guess coming back to, I guess, the recent promotion and kind of things going well with Worldwide, enjoying life there as clearly you are, you know, what would you say you have perhaps, what would you list as perhaps your biggest success story, either personally throughout your career to get to this point, or just, you know, since joining Worldwide? Because people don't just get given promotions for no reason. What would you list that as, perhaps?
I would say, you know, professionally at Worldwide in the last several months since I've been here, is the growth of our oncology group. And it's not just the growth, but it's really strategic growth and how we've really built a culture that I think enables us to do great work. Right. And you and I spent a little bit of time talking about culture and just building that collaborative culture of individuals who really own their projects, own their work. But they go about it in such a way that they create this teamwork environment where everybody wants to bring their best every day.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of that. Culture is super important to me. And I think we've done a great job at that. So I would say that's my most my proudest achievement.
Yeah. I think, yeah, again, I can't remember who I was speaking to recently. I think they're due to be on the podcast as well. But it was about accountability, really. You know, when everyone in an organization takes accountability, that's where that team effort comes together. Yeah, whereas if you just have a couple of weak links who are like, that's not my job, right, then it all falls apart. So, yeah, it sounds as though, again, that communication piece and you being the glue to stick it all together is where you come in.
I just like to say that part of my job is to put the right people in place to execute, you know, whatever work we're working on, and then just get out of their way. Mm. Give them the tools and what they need in order to execute and stay out of their way.
Yeah. Right. So it's all you can do. I mean, you've hired people for a reason. You need to let Absolutely. Them kind of get on and do it. And look, I guess, speaking of now kind of getting on, what are the plans for yourself and worldwide? Look, of course, if there's anything revolutionary that you cannot share for disclosure reasons, etc., please do not. What are the plans for you next in terms of innovations coming from, you know, your team worldwide, predictions for the market? Where do you see things over the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months?
I see continued growth. We're really trying to strategically build this oncology team as within worldwide. And I'm speaking specifically about oncology because we are separated by therapeutic area business units.
Right.
And really grow that portfolio. I'm just seeing so many interesting possible new treatments coming out of the biotech and pharma space right now. And we really want to be a part of that. So really paying attention to the modalities of treatment, the trends in the oncology industry, and being a part of that. Some of the things I personally focus on a lot, for instance, is like cell therapy treatments, immuno-oncology. Mm-hmm. We're really seeing a trend in the industry toward that, and we want to grow that part of our oncology business. So that's one area that we're definitely focusing on and making sure that everybody out there knows that's a focus for us. We have strategically grown the talent within our group and also brought people in like myself, and we want to continue to grow that part of our business.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it all goes. And I'm sure I will see how it all goes, because I think in terms of culture and presence, certainly online these days, as far as, I mean, you class yourself as a mid-sized CRO, but worldwide to me just says large. But, you know, there's still that feel of there is that culture that comes through from a lot of the online and social media activity that I see from the company. So be interesting to watch this all develop. And I know that you're pretty active on there as well, both with the occasional personal post on LinkedIn mixed in with business, because business Sure. isn't all business these days.
I think it's important. One of the things that we find really important is, you know, everybody in our team, they're individuals, and I want, and our, you know, people above me really set the tone. I mean, my leader, Claire Wallace, sets that tone of caring about the person first. And so, yes, we have a great marketing team, and they give us some excellent content to put out on social media. But I do like to mix in the personal, because that's a part of us. That's part of who we are.
Definitely. Well, I think that's why you and I are speaking now, Steve. I think I saw you at a baseball game and thought, oh, this guy looks like he's got a bit of character. Let me reach out to him.
A little bit of a character is probably right. And I'm going back. I'm going back, actually. I'm taking my two sons. So we're going to attend a couple of games, and maybe I'll take a picture or two and post.
Please do. That's the sort of stuff that I like to see. I don't want all the corporate stuff all the time. You know, there's only so much of it I can handle. Yeah. But look, Steve, it's been a pleasure having you on today. But before I let you go, look, we always finish up the podcast with a quick fire questions round, just to kind of get under the bonnet a little bit with a few things. So look, I'll kick us off, you know, talking about younger life. What advice would you give to your younger self? Just one piece of advice.
Ask more questions, speak less.
Very smart. I've heard that one a few times from other guests, but again, so true.
As you ask me questions.
Yes, exactly. And look, my next question then, what would you recommend as kind of your number one book or resource for our audience?
Okay. I would say as a leader, it is The Ideal Team Player by Patrick Lencioni. Mm-hmm. Read that book, and there are certain characteristics that he lists as being very, very key to be effective in a team. And there are three key attributes, and it's humble, hungry, smart. Humility, that's kind of self-explanatory. Hungry is a hunger and a drive that a person has, and that's internal. Mm-hmm. And smart isn't IQ smart, it's more emotional intelligence. So I have taken that with me ever since I read that book, and actually they, on their website, they offer interview questions as a free guide to help you dig into those attributes. If, for instance, you were interviewing somebody for a position, I found that to be super helpful. So for the leaders out there that might be listening to that, if you haven't read that book, I'd highly recommend it.
Well, look, I guess kind of my next question is normally about the top three qualities that people value most when building their teams. I mean, would that be the three that you look for then?
Absolutely. I have relied on those three. I've shared with other people, and it's been super helpful for me, because most of the people, when I'm talking to somebody about a position, the majority of time it's for a potential project manager, and those are qualities, because that's a person that's a key role, right? In a study team for a clinical trial, they have to hold it all together. They have to hold people accountable that don't administratively report to them. So I found, you know, humility, hunger, and smarts or emotional intelligence to be so important. So those are my three. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, look, didn't mean to jump ahead. I actually didn't know you were going to ask that question.
Well, there you go. Goes very much in line with that. I mentioned a moment ago about seeing you out at a baseball game and posting that online, but what is your favorite thing outside of work?
Favorite thing outside of work, actually, I'm pretty active, so I like to participate in different kinds of typically running events. I enjoy relays, and so I've got one coming up called the Blue Ridge Relay, and it's 208 miles in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Wow. So enjoy that. I did my first full marathon this year. So
incredible. Yeah. I remember you telling me this, and there's me thinking relays that I used to do at kind of high school, where it was a 50 meter dash and back. But right. this is a serious relay, right?
Yeah.
Brilliant. And look, finally, what is your number one golden rule for both life and business?
I would say, care about people. Work is important, but everybody's an individual. We all have things going on in our lives that may or may not come through in a professional setting. So care about the person first. And especially let that be known, right? Because it comes back to the relationships we talked about before, right? The relationships are key, and to help build the relationship, you got to care about the person. So do that first. Everything else will take care of itself.
Love it. So look, Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Look, for anyone looking to reach out to you, I know that I found you and came across you via LinkedIn. What's the best way to learn more about yourself worldwide, connect with you, etc.?
Yeah, I would recommend LinkedIn. And thanks, James, for that. I really appreciate you reaching out. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. Reach out, send me a connection request, shoot me a DM. I'd be happy to chat, get connected, whatever it is. That's the best way to reach me.
Fantastic. Well, look, Steve, thanks again for being part of the Huxley Mawson podcast. Been an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure, James. Thank you for reaching out, and really enjoyed the conversation today.
Cheers.